You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Welcome to Radical Australian Community Radio 3CR, streaming live from the studios of 3CR in Melbourne. We have two for the price of one today. Daryl, I'm disappointed in you.
No champagne. Ooh.
Well, how did you know? We had two guests sitting on the couch at the front. You were pissing around with a cup of tea at the back. Where was the champagne? Did you drink it?
Yeah, you caught me out. I must have drank it.
Yeah. He said, you know what he said to me, listeners? I can't believe this in guests. I'll introduce you in a minute. He said, I didn't have any ice. As if you put ice in champagne. What type of pleb are you? I mean, you're next, you got to tell me you're unemployed.
Oh, I am.
Look, we've got two people. They wonder what they've walked into. We have, I'm going to use their full names, Violet Homewood Marie Coco, capital C, small o, capital C, small o. And then we have Brad Coco, capital C, small o, capital C, small o, Homewood. Hello.
Hello, Joe. Thank you for having us. It's great to be
here. Look, it's a pleasure to have people of your standing, although you're sitting in the studio. Now, we're going to do about a half an hour about your life. Oh, my God, you won't believe this, listeners. They're holding hands. They are holding hands. What's going on here? Is this a newly married couple or something? Come on, what's going on?
Tell me you're newly married without telling me you're newly married. Really.
Come on. I mean, I've had hundreds of guests through this studio. I've never had people holding hands.
Well, we thought you were holding hands, so we would also hold hands.
Well, I'm holding my own hands because, you know, I'm a narcissist, so I hold my own hands. But you're real people and you're holding each other's hands. What's all this about? Have you got married recently?
We're not even married a year, so we were married last November.
They say the first year's the hardest, but we're laughing.
We're laughing at that.
You're married last... Look, I hate to say this. Why did you bother? Tell us what happened. How did it all happen?
Well, it started in a tent.
It started in a tent in a camp.
But it escalated.
Was it late at night when it started?
It was late at night. Right. We were planning an action. We were planning an action in regards to the climate and ecological emergency and the absolute failure of governments.
Yeah, come on. I want the love story. Right. We can talk about this later on.
I'm equally passionate about love and the planet. No, so, well, anyway, Brad turns to me and goes, look, can I propose to you while we're doing this action of people might have heard we blocked the Westgate Bridge.
Have you ever met him before?
We've been.
Yeah, we'd already fallen in love by this stage.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah, I just thought he was a bit presumptuous.
Yeah, no.
Finds himself alone in a tent with you and then proposes.
No. We'd been comrades for years and then we ended up falling in love and then we're down in Lucha Vida and we're doing some forest actions down there and we're still planning the Westgate action at that stage. And I had this idea of maybe proposing on top of the truck and it's like, it's going to distract from the messaging.
Yeah. Also, don't propose to me about asking to propose to me. It was sort of, you know,
stunt,
getting
stunt
around
proposal.
Really. That's right. So I was like, nah, not like that. Yeah. Anyway, so we did this action. We blocked the Westgate. Both got sentenced to 2 months prison.
2 months, yes. Yeah. I remember you devils.
Yeah.
There was a truck there. Yeah. All right. We'll talk about that in a minute.
Yes.
And so you got sent to prison.
We got sent to prison.
2 months. Have either of you been to prison before?
I have, yeah.
I'd spent a significant amount of time in custody centres, so I felt like I was kind of groomed for it, but not the real thing.
And, you know, once in those four walls, you know, you really think about what's important and what you want to come out to.
Right.
I knew it was him that I wanted to come out to so much. I needed this. I needed to hold hands again.
Yeah, holding hands. They haven't let go of each other's hand. This is so sickening. It's like married at first sight.
Well, right. You know, our work is so hard and to find joy in it is so precious.
Right.
And that's what we provide for each other. Right.
So when did you get married?
I wrote a letter. No, well, first I proposed to him while we were in prison.
I proposed.
Into prison mail.
So I wrote him a letter.
Into prison mail. One of the only things you get for free in prison is into prison mail.
Right.
They provide you with the envelopes and everything.
Yeah, right.
So he was in the prison next door and, I sent him a letter proposing. He said yes, thankfully. And that gave us something when we came out to work towards and build towards. And that sort of, you know, a wedding is such a, and celebrating love is just so, so precious for our community.
What was the wedding like? Tell us about the wedding.
It was the best day of our lives, really.
Yeah, I know that, but, you know, I mean, it's always the best day of your life until you divorce. But what did you do?
We got married by the bay in Williamstown.
Beautiful.
We're both in Williamstown, so we took a gamble on the weather. We had a backup plan, and we got married by the water and just brought our friends and family and community together.
Right.
An outdoor wedding, and then went to a local venue we'd hired and danced and did the speeches and the music and all that sort of thing.
The whole works. Did you ever celebrate?
We did.
We actually got married three times. So we did the legal.
Three times.
We appeased the state and we're anarchists, so that didn't come easily.
No.
But we appeased the state and got married with a celebrant so we could do it legally.
Yeah.
Then we called that the signing of the papers.
The signing of the papers. Then we did the big thing with the friends in the community. And we had a friend of ours who was the celebrant for that, and that was the really special day.
Right.
And then on our honeymoon up in...
Honeymoon. Oh, this is very traditional.
Yamba on Angarri Point, we did the old jump over the broomstick and got married for a third time.
Well, you know, I think people have been coming together and committing themselves to each other since time immemorial. And it's such a sacred tradition to say, you know what, through thick and thin, I got your back.
Well, I'm going to do something I've never done on air. I am going to bless your union.
Oh, that's
You know, as the host of Radical Australia, we bless your union. And we wish you many, many, not only happy years, but active years.
Thank you.
So, I mean, they're still holding hands. I'm just...
We did write Radical Trust into our vows, actually.
What was the Radical Trust? What does that mean?
Just radical trust in each other.
That's not radical. You should bloody trust each other if you get married.
Yeah.
I mean, unless it's an open marriage.
I think there's a particular context around being activists on the front line and engaged in radical politics that there's some radical trust that we're always going to do what's right for us and the planet.
Now that we've wasted 10 minutes talking about your marriage, I just want to ask you a few questions, Violet. What year were you born?
1990.
And where were you born?
I was born Gadigal Country, Sydney.
In Sydney. Yeah. And how long, did you go to school there?
Yep.
High school, primary school?
High school, primary school. And then I spent a bit of time also at Newcastle High School as well.
A bit of time.
Yeah, my parents were divorced, so to travel between
excuse
the two
me, don't
cities.
Follow your parents' example, please. I've given you my blessings. You know, I'm going to lose all credibility.
Well, Brad's parents are still together, so aren't that they? Gives us hope.
All right. And did you finish high school?
No.
Why not?
No. I'm a sensitive soul, and it was all a bit much, really. I did go to university a few years later, but...
Which university?
Macquarie University.
And what did you do?
I started in marketing.
Marketing?
Yes.
And selling shit.
And I ended in philosophy.
And you ended in philosophy.
Yeah.
I assumed you liked marketing more than philosophy.
I got high distinctions across the board in marketing, but as soon as I got into philosophy, it actually got hard. So I much preferred philosophy.
Yeah, well, you know what they say. It's easy to sell. It's hard to have an ideology or a philosophy, understanding how life works.
Yeah.
And you, young Brad, what were you born?
I was born in 1973.
This is a bit of cradle snatching here.
Well, the running gag is Violet calls me over 50s living because on the honeymoon there was a big billboard for a new estate that was being built. I had this couple and said, over 50s living. So
Did you put a deposit on it?
I just wondered if they'd take me too.
I was actually visiting some friends yesterday in one of those lifestyle villages. One's 90 and one's 86. And I thought it was a good decision for them at the end of their life because it's easy.
Entry. That's why the paperwork.
Yeah, there's a lot of paperwork. So where were you born, Brad?
I was born in Williamstown Hospital. I'm from the West. Yeah.
Well, you think you're from the West. That's not the West. That's the gentrified West.
Well, it is now. Yeah. But when I was growing up, it wasn't. It was very working class when I was growing up. It was actually quite a rough suburb.
Williamstown,
But I experienced...
All those dockyard...
The dockyards. And I remember the paper round going through the pubs.
It's good that we privatised all that.
Oh, yeah. It's gone well, hasn't it?
Well, our property prices have gone up. Come on.
It's done all right by some people.
You can't get anything less than $2 million.
Yeah. I watched Williamstown change a lot as I grew up, and for the worst, I'd have to say.
I've still got a few patients down there, which I do home visits on, and they've been there for years. And you go down their street, and they're the only house left. And there's these McMansions all up and down the streets. Really, it has changed, hasn't it?
Oh, dramatically.
So where'd you go to school?
I went to the local public school for primary school. Then I went to a grammar school until they asked me to leave.
Excuse me, why did they ask you to leave?
Well, I've always had a problem with authority. I was an anarchist and I didn't even realise it, Joe.
No, you're an anti-authoritarian.
Yeah, you weren't
an anarchist at that stage.
No, not really. No. But nobody's born an anarchist. Early signs.
So what did you do? Did you punch somebody?
I had a real problem with authority. And no, it wasn't anything physical, but I had to have the last say with the teachers. And there's a particular teacher I had a beef with and would...
Yeah. You're lucky... It wasn't 2025 because there is a psychiatric diagnostic classification for children like you.
No.
It's called Authority Defiance Syndrome.
What?
And I am not making that up. Ugh. It's been added to the classification of psychiatric disorders.
Oh, good.
So obviously you had Authority Defiance Syndrome as a child.
I've been waiting for someone to give it a name. I'm so relieved now.
Yeah. I won't even send you a bill for that, Brad. You're very lucky. So obviously, did you finish high school?
From there I went to St. Joe's Tech in South Melbourne, right. And I left in year 10 to do a trade.
What trade?
Landscape gardening.
Right. That's pretty tough work, landscaping.
Everything's on the ground, Joe.
Yeah.
So you're either on your knees or you're bending over the whole time.
Yeah, and you've got to lift plants and dig holes.
Yeah,
exactly. And you can't use a lot of machinery because it's all small spaces, isn't it?
Yeah, a lot of that too, and a lot of paving too, so
Slate.
Slate, bricks, a lot of old reds. I paved a lot of old reds.
So how long did you last in that occupation for?
Oh, I got out of that. I spent some time on the local council and I was there when Kennett amalgamated and tended out all the jobs and destroyed that as well.
Yep.
Well, worked for myself as a landscaper and then I went into the building industry and worked as a labourer because, I could get off the ground.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than working for yourself. It's really tough. People don't understand how tough it is, making an income.
Oh, and not being able to switch off too was a big thing. And then I drove a truck for about 13, 14 years.
That explains a lot of things.
Yeah. That truck license came in handy.
That's what I was saying. We'll talk about that in a minute.
We'll get to that one.
Now Violet, did you finish your philosophy course?
No, they say if you finish a philosophy course, you miss the point.
Do I? No. So what happened?
Did my capstone unit, so I've got a couple
Excuse
of
Excuse me. Brad, have you ever heard of Daryl, sorry, have you ever heard of capstone unit?
Capstone unit is like, it's like the...
No, I haven't heard of it. Well, what is it?
It's like the core dream of unit of information.
Wow. It has like the now, top wonder one. You pass marketing with high distinction the way you describe that. You've got a flair for publicity. You've got a flair.
Well, anyway, I did that on the need for civil resistance in the climate emergency. Now, hang on.
You did that on, again, what?
The need for civil resistance in the climate emergency.
Well, they're right. University's gone to the dogs.
Yeah.
That wouldn't have happened in the 1970s when I went to uni.
That was my topic. I chose
that.
That
was your topic.
Yeah, that was
topic.
I chose that. Can you imagine?
Yes.
And I got a high distinction, and so I just, walked away and began organising full-time as an activist.
That's a big jump to go from university to organising full-time. Why?
Well, I was already involved, but...
Involved how?
Through Extinction Rebellion. I had started to be on street marches and protests. I was engaging with anti-fascist marches and... I saw the refugees in the hotels and was being pulled into having empathy for these different front lines and saw the power of street protest and the protection of the Jabiru trees was also going on at the time.
Hang on. The power of street protest.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
My very first street rally, the Nazis were trying to march through the streets.
Right.
And there was about six different groups working together to stop them pouring their hate through the city.
Right.
The police were protecting the Nazis. And I saw community organising hold those violent thugs in the park. And I saw how that was done with people and I could see the real power in that and the need for that.
Right. Now, you said organising activities. How do you become an organiser?
You go to a lot of meetings.
Yeah, it's meeting central.
Excuse me, Brad. I'm not talking to you. Do you mind not interrupting? They're still holding hands just in case anybody wants to know. She hasn't let go because he made a faux pas there. But tell us, seriously, yeah, it's a very important role.
Yeah.
But how did you drift into that?
I went to a talk called Heading for Extinction and What to Do About It. And at the end of the talk, they said, put your hand up if you want to be involved. And we're going to be in a meeting next week and come to the meeting. And so I turned up and then they said, we need someone to paint banners. And I said, well, I can paint banners. And so I painted banners. And then the next week it was they needed someone to bring the banners to the march. And then all of a sudden I'm organizing and it just and then it becomes helping write media releases.
You were radicalized.
I was radicalised. Melbourne, I heard that Melbourne's one of the top 10 protest cities in the world.
Do you know why?
Why?
Do you know your history of Victoria? Do you know why?
The 888 movement.
No.
No?
The Eureka Rebellion of 1854, 3rd of December 1854. The only armed rebellion, organised armed rebellion against the state in the post-colonial history of this country. So that's the reason. I'll give you a history lesson, lads and lasses, because you should know this. It just wasn't the 3rd of December. For about 30 years, there was a continuing struggle between direct actionists and parliamentary people who believed in parliamentary democracy. And for over 10 years after the Eureka Rebellion, there was an alternative state government or colonial government at the Southern Markets, where the old Southern Cross Hotel used to be, for over 10 years. There were riots, and it's all about access to land. So there's this long radical history. Victoria was the first place in the world in 1872 to introduce free, compulsory, secular education. Unheard of, 1872. Healesville is named after Premier Heales, who was the premier involved. So if you look at early colonial history, and you don't look at the pre-colonial, you know, you look at that, you can see that there's this radical element in Victoria. And that's the reason. That's why. And that's why, like the Allan government, you know, they keep talking about introducing new laws to curtail protest, to curtail speech, but they've got to react to that history. And that's why they're very reluctant. But if you get a Liberal National Party, and they'll just bang. Because the history, if you look at the history at that period of time, it was between the group that wanted to expand individual liberties and the group that wanted to curtail them. You know? Sorry, Brad. Sorry for the history lesson.
No, I love it.
It's so important to really be grounded in this time, as you say. I mean, today we've had a comrade be remanded into custody.
Where, here in Melbourne?
Here in Melbourne, a protester who has been, a very staunch anti-genocide protester and... You know, they were at the recent allegedly they were at the restaurant, the Mizanon restaurant, where the owner was a spokesperson for the Gaza Humanitarian Fund that is putting oxy in the flour for Gazans, and they're using the aid, weaponizing the aid, firing upon Gazans who are trying to get fed after they're being starved and a genocide put upon them. And so this Palestinian, you know, activist, this anti-genocide activist has turned up to this restaurant and said, you're eating at the place of somebody who's supporting weaponized aid. I think that's a valid target, and now they've been remanded into custody for it.
Right. All right. We don't want to talk about the particular case. We don't want to jeopardise their time in court because you've been through the process. You know what it's like. But, Brad.
Yes, Joe.
Are you an organiser?
Yeah, I think you could say I'm an organiser.
Well, how did that happen?
A very similar story, actually.
You were radicalised.
I was radicalised, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
if I remember correctly, you were on this program at one stage.
I was, a couple of years ago, few years ago.
Did that help to radicalise you?
That definitely helped.
Oh, good, I'm pleased we've done something right now.
Make me even more radical, Joe. Yeah, look, similar story. It was the 2019 election. I'd been going to street protests and, you know, A to B rallies and stuff for years. I had a young son, I'd shared custody, and I was kind of limited in what I could do, but he'd just sort of reached 19.
Yep.
We had that election in 2019. We thought there was going to be a change of government, and I was particularly engaged in climate and environment at the time. and we didn't get the change we needed, and Extinction Rebellion was on the rise then, and I'd volunteered for the Greens and knocked on doors and was very deflated and very depressed with the result.
What was the result of the election or the result of your door knocking?
No, when Morrison got back in, basically. Yeah.
Well, he had God on his side. You didn't.
Yeah.
Well, that's what he told us.
Clearly. Yeah.
I mean, you know, you can't be depressed if God's on their side.
Yeah, but I mean,
it's just like the Israeli situation. God's on their side.
Oh, yeah, you're the chosen people and all
that
nonsense.
You've got to remember that. We're fighting against God. Hey, are you holding hands under the desk? They're still holding hands.
Anyway, I soon learnt that action is the antidote to despair,
and
really haven't looked back since then. It's been a very challenging journey. It's been a very enriching journey.
Yeah.
No regrets.
Well, I keep saying apathy is the aphrodisiac of the ruling classes.
Yeah.
Without apathy, they've got problems.
Yeah.
Now, I'm a little bit concerned. I'm a bit concerned about profitability, corporate profitability. I mean, you are Australians, aren't you? You're both born in this country, weren't you?
Yeah.
I mean,
stray alien,
But what's this bullshit about not supporting corporate profitability and this bullshit about a climate emergency?
Yeah.
I mean, how did you come to this conclusion, you know? It seems to be a running theme in this discussion, well, this chat we're having.
Well, look, the interesting thing is, from my experience, most people get activated through a single issue, and then you get in and you discover intersectionality and how interconnected everything
is. That's a big word, intersectionality.
Well, it's a very important word, though.
Well, explain it to me.
That all the issues intersect.
You're kidding.
Yeah, yeah.
Joining the dots.
A lot of us did that as a kid.
Why don't you just use the word joining the
dots? Because it's activist jargon, Joe. You know that.
Well, you need to be able to join the dots. So once you get involved in one thing, something else crops up.
Well, you soon learn that, you soon start to join the dots and realise that
the systems of power, they rest on each other and support each other and build on each other to validate their own power and each other's power.
All right. I'm just going to try to dissect this a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Systems of power. Yeah. Where do you think power lies in society? I mean, you're activists, you're anti-authoritarian. You describe yourself as anarchist. You're involved in many actions, and we'll talk about specific actions later on. But where do you think power resides in Australian society?
Well, the state and the ruling class is the short answer to that.
The state.
And the ruling class.
Yeah. And the ruling class.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So that's what you consider to be the institutions we need to reform or get rid of?
Oh, I think we need to dismantle the state in the most humane way possible, ideally. But the ruling class, and there's obviously not just the political class, it's the billionaire class, it's the corporations. And we know, I think one thing the Marxists definitely got right is the state's primary function is to protect and conserve power.
Yeah, well, that's been the role of the state, whether you call it a monarchy or a state capitalism or private capitalism, that's its role, is to protect the institution. So what institutions do you think that in Australia today that are your primary targets in the type of actions you're taking?
Across the board, I think clearly the political institutions are a massive problem because they are essentially middle management for the corporations and the ruling class. I mean,
so what you're saying is the legislation we get to Parliament is legislation which supports the status quo. So you don't actually see legislation get through Parliament which, say, addresses the issue of poverty or the issue of inequality or the issue of, you know, the various issues. So you're saying Parliament is managers.
They're middle management. They're doing the work. The political parties don't get those massive political donations from the corporate class for nothing.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought they were just generous.
I mean, look,
I'm going to ask you a private question because nobody listens to the Radical Australia and nobody listens to the podcast. That's right, Daryl, isn't it?
Yep, that's totally right.
There's nobody there. Nobody listens. Nobody listens to the program.
No.
Put all the tech away.
I won't ask. It's just too embarrassing. I don't want to embarrass you.
Come on. Now you've asked. You've seen us hold hands. We can't. It doesn't get more embarrassing.
They've stopped holding hands.
Our legs are touching.
See, what happens is
our legs are touching.
This is how you radicalise people. You bring them in. You make a fuss about their marriage. You ask them about their past. Then you ask them the hard questions. and they start concentrating and they realize not just about love will solve everything. All right, let's go. So if
it's a key component though. You need a lot of love.
Do you?
You do, because this, I mean, the repercussions of fighting the state and the violence that it inputs on people, you need to have love and care to heal yourself and heal each other through that.
Yeah.
You're not suggesting the activists should have mechanisms by which to prevent burnout, which is a common problem.
What's burnout? That sounds a bit like jargon.
Well, it is jargon. It means when you're stuffed.
Yeah. Well, we can both vouch for that because we both were probably on the verge of burnout when we fell in love, and that was a game changer. We just we get a lot.
Tell us about that. Why did you both feel that you're right? Because it's the problem of most activists, all right?
Yeah.
Activism, activists as meteorites and stars. The meteorite comes in, is going to solve all the problems in a year, gets burnt out, you never see them again, they take up gambling or something, or alcohol or drugs, all right? Then you've got the star, and I consider you two to be stars, not because of what you've done, but because of you've hung in for the long haul. And you're up there, so what allows you to continue to function as activists despite all the hurdles and setbacks you've faced?
And community is a big one.
Mm-hmm.
You got to have the right people around you, to have support around you.
Mm-hmm.
Movement elders who've walked the path before and can shed that light forward.
Right.
But to have each other too has been a... It's been a game changer.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
It really has.
You're listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned to hear the rest of your 3CR podcast.
Look, it's almost halfway through the program. This is Radical Australia.
Already?
Well, you know, we ask the hard questions here. Daryl, the producer, has been listening intently. Are you going to report them to ASIO or ASIS? Which one, Daryl?
No.
Neither?
No.
They're not worth it?
Neither. No.
No. No.
Yeah, I don't want to report anyone.
Don't you?
No.
Well, that's what I
expect. That's relieving. Thanks.
Yeah, as I said, nobody listens to the program, so you're safe. You can say what you like. Yeah, but look, it's just quite extraordinary, really, because I've been an activist for over 50 years, and most people fall by the wayside, and you've kind of made it an exceptionally important discovery. And the fact is that you've got to look after yourself. You can't. It's like being a carer for somebody who's got a permanent injury, or a congenital issue at birth. And if you don't look after yourself, you fall by the wayside. So how do you two look after yourselves? I don't want to know what happened in the tent, but I mean, generally,
it's a key component.
Yes.
We do try to carve out some time for ourselves, and we're not always as good at that as we should be.
Brad's a surfer, so the ocean, whenever he gets a good surf, he just glows.
Yeah.
He just glows.
That's a big part of it.
Yeah, there's not much surf at Williamstown.
In summer, surprisingly, with the southwesterly winds, when you're a teenager, we used to call them the Willy Ripples.
Yeah.
You can catch waves.
Can you?
Yeah. A lot of young surfers in Williamstown cut their teeth on the Willy Ripples. But
Are the Willy Ripples a little bit where the old rifle range was, so that people could take pot shots at you?
More around the main beach.
That's good.
Yeah.
And what's your favourite surfing beach?
Probably on the west coast of Victoria, so the Great Ocean Road, probably a wave like Cathedral, which is just before you get to Lawn. Winky Pop and Bells Beach, but really crowded in summer. If you can get, you know, during the week in winter, you can get a really uncrowded good session. Yeah.
And you, Violet, have you got any interests?
I'm a musician.
What do you play?
Music.
I know you play music. What instrument? Your voice or?
I sing, I play guitar, I play piano, I play ukulele, I play harmonica, you know, music.
Yeah. Super talented.
I didn't say I was good, Joe. I just said I enjoy it.
And did your parents kind of send you to piano lessons as a little kid?
Music's always been a big part of my family and life.
And this is what I was going to ask you before, but I thought I was too embarrassed to ask you. Are your parents still alive, Brad?
Yes.
What do they think about the path you've taken?
It's an interesting question. Mum understands why we do what we do, and the standard line is, why does it always have to be you when there's an arrest or custody involved? Mm-hmm. They're clearly pretty distressed when both of us went to prison. Dad understands the issue, but he doesn't like the fact that we block traffic and inconvenience people, so he's quite conservative like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a point of great tension over the years, but you have to be true to yourself and do what you think is right.
Mm. You still have Christmas lunch?
Yeah, look, we're still very close.
Oh, that's
very
good.
We're still very close.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, it is. Family's really important to me, and we are still very close. But it's been a point of serious tension.
You got any siblings?
I've got a sister.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've got a son, a 25-year-old son.
What does your son think about all this? Their old man, you know, up there in prison.
He gets it. He gets it. He's been very politicised over Gaza and Palestine himself.
Right.
So, yeah, he really does get it.
Right.
And I don't know if I should mention or not.
Don't mention things you don't want to mention.
Yeah, okay.
Just mention what you want to mention.
This
program is podcast.
And
there may be one listener.
Cool. But, back to the music thing. We've actually started writing a bit of music together lately.
Writing
and performing a bit of music. And that's been very, very healing and cathartic. A lot of it's on message, you know. So it's a good way to get things off your chest and
I need a bit of help, and you seem like the type of young couple holding hands that have got the they've got the joy of life, which was stamped out of me years ago. But I've got an idea for a musical. Musicals are the big thing these days.
I do, yes.
And I spoke about this on the Anarchist World this morning. I've got this idea for a musical called War Criminal Nominates Buffoon for Nobel Prize, for Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah.
It would be a hit.
You sure that wasn't Batuta Advocate, was it?
No, that was me. That's me. Stuff there. They're amateurs compared to Anarchist World This Week. This is my musical. Could you imagine? Nobody would believe us.
Yeah.
Could you imagine? War Criminal nominates Buffoon for Nobel Peace Prize. Yeah. The musical.
Yeah.
We'd have the Majesty's Theatre, the Regent, running simultaneously. Two casts.
Yeah.
Well, obviously you'd have to star in it, and that would put 3CR at a loss.
No, I'm not starring. No. I'm going to make some money out of it, all right?
Yeah.
Because, see, people have called me a professional agitator, but I've never been paid. Are you professional agitators? Have you been paid?
We're not getting paid to do what we do, no.
And
it's not lucrative. I mean, we don't go without. We eat every day and we have a roof over our head. But we don't have superannuation.
Yeah, people. That's what I love people say. You're a professional agitator because you've been involved in a number of issues. The fact is, we don't get paid.
No,
we're not professionals. No. We're amateurs.
How dare you care about all these issues, Joe? How dare you have compassion in your heart?
Because I'm sick of tired of being called a professional. You've been called a professional agitator on your program, Breadline?
No, not yet.
No, when you are, just tell them you're an amateur because nobody pays you.
Yeah, well, I'll ask them to pay me. If anyone calls me professional, I'll say, well, give me some money then.
George Soros, that's the other one. George Soros, you're on the payroll of George Soros. He's not making any payments.
No payments.
Yeah.
No, because that's one way people try to negate what you're doing.
Yeah.
Somehow because you're actively involved in a number of occasions, there's something wrong with you. You're either mentally unstable, you're a professional demonstrator. Would you agree to any of those statements?
Well, I think it's damaging to our community to say that somebody getting paid or God forbid, having food and a roof over their head while they also organise. I mean, let's not demonise people who do, because there are people who do get paid to help, manage social media pages or whatever. That's okay. Like, it's actually okay to to live and also fight for justice. And I don't think that you need to be squatting in a house in the dark to be a valid activist. So, no, we're not a professional in that way, but I do think, comrades out there who are, shame.
Well, I'm not talking about the comrades out there. I'm talking about the fact that you've been in the headlines as a couple over the last period of time, and the way people tend to dismiss activist by saying yeah. somebody's paying you to do that. Obviously, yeah. there are paid organisers.
Yeah, yeah. Political parties. Why is that a problem?
Well, it is a problem. A paid organiser is different to somebody who's actually been involved in the direct action, being paid to, in my opinion, it's different to have an organiser. It's different to have an association, you know, where you pay people. Like at 3CR, we've got over 500 volunteers and I think 5 paid staff, all right, mm-hmm. to do the organisation. But the volunteers don't get paid. And I think it's the same. My opinion is that as an activist, if you're at the front line, you're at the front line for the issue.
Mm. Yeah. But, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm not denigrating organisers or people yeah. get paid by political parties. It's if you look at Morm or Faux or some of the socialist yeah. parties, they've all got their trade unions, they've all got their paid yeah, organisers.
They pay activists. I think we should be paying.
Who's going to pay you?
Yeah, well, you
well,
know.
Well, then you're beholden. That's the whole point.
Well, you know, I get, you know, you got to do the right people, obviously, but I think there's got to be some sort of way for us to support each other, to be fed and do this work. If we're going to build a movement that's big enough and strong enough to challenge mm-hmm. the state, mm-hmm. we need mutual aid. And sometimes
well, mutual aid isn't payment.
No, but sometimes that does look like, oh, you have $350 to keep the roof over your head. Here's that money, you know, like it's got to go through.
No. Look, I'm the convener for the West Papuan Rent Collective.
Yeah.
We've raised over $250,000 over the last 10 years to keep their office in Collins Street going. I mean, they're not paid. They're volunteers. Mm. We're the organisation behind those volunteers and we raise the money to keep the organisation functioning. I think that's the difference because once you see, it's like 3CR. We get some government money, but we don't rely on government money. We don't rely on corporate donations. We rely on our listener subscribers and the recent radio fight. Yeah. And that's what's given us over the last 49 years the independence to do what we do.
I understand that. I understand that. And that's very important. It's very important that, you know, if you do pay people, you're not influencing. And
that's right.
There is always that risk.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I still think that we need to find ways to support the front line more in that way.
Right.
I really do.
Yeah, I mean, Just Stop Ball is a great example of that. They had a certain amount of paid organisers, which were probably a similar ratio to 3CR, and they got a lot done, and they did get one of their demands met. And
No, they had quite 50 employees. It was quite a significant amount of people being paid. And how they did it, they had a amount that people maximum could claim. And depending on how much you need, you just claim what you need for that week to survive. And so people who managed to live really cheap, whatever, they would just take a little bit. And it wasn't about how much work you got done. It was just acknowledging you were part of the community and that you needed, you know, we wanted you, I wasn't part of it, but they wanted you focused on the work. And so the things were taken care of so you could do that, you know. And I think that's good.
Mm-hmm.
Why not, like...
Well...
If we can.
It's the old saying, he who pays the piper calls the tune, and it's about independence.
It does depend where the money's coming from and there shouldn't be any strings attached on
that's
that.
Right.
I could not agree more.
Well, it was a top-down organisation,
right,
you know,
yeah.
because they had a specific campaign to achieve.
Yeah, that's understandable.
Yeah, and they won.
Mm. Well, there you go. Now, what campaigns have you been involved in the last 2 years that kind of caused you to find yourself rubbing shoulders with some interesting characters?
Well, we've done quite a few actions with the Bob Brown Foundation in Tassie,
right.
fighting for the forests.
Yep.
Spent a lot of time at Camp Sovereignty, some incredible people there.
Mm.
It's just such an important part
Uncle
of the activist
Robbie.
Scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just such, yeah, such a privilege to have Uncle Robbie there and be so accessible. Blockade Australia campaigns the last so many years.
And tell us about those Blockade Australia campaigns, the last one you're involved in.
Oh, the last one was, well, interesting. The last one was last year. We just got out of prison.
What were you in prison for?
Well, for blocking the Westgate Bridge with a truck. We did a truck jump on the Westgate Bridge.
That's why you need the truck licence, yeah.
Yeah. We blocked 3 lanes and because...
Well, at least they didn't get you for unlicensed driving.
No. Well, because we both had a significant record and because we're both on 2 separate court orders in separate states, they basically gave us prison. And they gave us 3 weeks and then the state appealed that and they gave us 2 months.
Right.
But we got out of prison, out of the loop pretty much.
Did you do the whole 2 months?
Yeah, I did the whole 2 months. Yeah, yeah.
What prison were you in?
I was at the mat for 3 weeks.
In the mat?
In the mat, maximum.
You're that dangerous.
I was at apparently I'm maximum security. I was at the
maximum security.
At the mat for 3 weeks, and they tried to move me to Port Phillip, and some older crooks told me that, you know, you can engage in some non-compliance, and I did, and that worked. Then we had the appeal, and then they dropped my rating to a B rating and sent me to Ravenhall.
Right.
And I was fortunate enough to be in the Koori unit at Ravenhall, and I spent the last 5 weeks there. And the elder of the unit, Uncle Frank, was in the cell next door, and he's an old Fitzroy boy.
Yeah.
And as soon as I made the connection that I've been spending time at Camp Sovereignty, he knew some people that I knew. He just said, look, as long as you're not a dickhead, you're going to be all right in here.
Yeah,
And he really looked after me.
So he put you under his wing.
Yeah, totally.
And I was very fortunate. Yeah, how about you, Violet? What was your experience like?
Dame Phyllis. It's recently come out a lot about Dame Phyllis. There's a lot of lockdowns in Dame Phyllis, not enough staff. And, the women there are missing health appointments so often. It's very tragic. And, you know, a lot of them are mothers, and a lot of them, you know, they need support with their health. And some of them have even been sentenced to say, you're going here because you're going to get the support that you need. And then they apply for all the programs, and all the programs are shut down. So they're just not getting the support in there. Pretty sad place. But the women in there are some very beautiful people. And, yeah, we'd bake cakes for each other. I'm a vegan, so I'd bake vegan cakes. And I'd be like, it's salad, because it's just plant-based. And they liked that, because everyone's also a bit worried about their weight being in prison, not as much to do. So you tend to pile it on a bit, except the boys. The boys get buff. The girls roll out.
I
That's
come out
the
fitter
joke.
Than I've ever been,
Oh, the boys get buff, the girls get fat.
Yeah, that's how, and that's what happened, but between us as well. But yeah, anyway, my deepest solidarity to all the women in there, if they're listening, you know, hello. And
yeah, likewise to the guys,
Because people in there for decades.
Yeah.
Decades. Yeah. I remember, I'm old enough to remember when Fairfield, there was the women's prison at Fairfield before both of you were born, and there were about 25 women in prison in the whole of Victoria.
Oh, wow.
How many would you think there are now, women prisoners? Over 1,000?
I was only in once. There's two prisons in Victoria, are women's prisons. Dame Phyllis is the medium maximum, and then there's the minimum security, which is a farm prison.
So you weren't put in max security, were you?
I was in the medium maximum security prison, but I was in the lower rated area. For the second half of it.
You look very dangerous to me.
It tells a story, though, doesn't it? Yeah. From 25 incarcerated women to literally...
The laws have changed. They're just extraordinarily... especially for women prisoners, it's triple hard. As you said, many are mothers, many have got drug issues, many have got psychiatric issues, and they talk about rehabilitation, but it's just not there.
But it's not the health system in there is not functioning. It's Western health, and I could tell a lot of stories, but
we want to keep people's privacy.
That's right.
I was going to say, you can't help but think of the Proudhon quote about the law. The law, we know what it is and what it's worth. It's chains to the poor and weak. It's cobwebs to the rich and powerful, and it's a dragnet in the hands of government. And it's just such a prophetic quote. And it's over 100 years old, easily.
Well, if you want to appeal to the High Court and you haven't got a few million behind you, what's the point?
Yeah.
I mean, you've hit the nail on the head with that quote.
Yeah, Proudhon hit the nail on the head, didn't he? Yeah, really? Yeah, he really did. Yeah, and look, I've got a case in the Supreme Court at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
We went through the magistrates' court. I'm very fortunate to have a legal team representing me pro bono. I've got a SC and two junior barristers and two solicitors, and they're worth about $20,000 a day.
That's right.
And I just couldn't do what I'm doing if they weren't doing it pro bono. Mm. And again, that Proudhon quote just comes back to me every single
day. I remember at one stage, it must have been 30 or 40 years ago, I was threatened, if we'll get a QC to hold the briefs, notes, because that's how they threaten you.
Mm.
Hopefully you've got nothing.
No, we got no assets.
Oh,
no.
How lucky can you be?
Yeah, well, that's right.
When
we were sitting down with the legal team about this case in the Supreme Court, they said, you know, if you lose, they're going to get you for costs. And it's like
about $1 million.
You can't
get
blood out of a stone. We've got nothing other than the car that we share.
Yeah.
There's a surfboard and there's some instruments, and that's us. So
that should be worth at least 1,000.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're lucky.
Yeah.
The instruments would be about four and the surfboard would be about 50. So have you got... Look,
I got one more really important things coming up.
Oh, we've still got plenty of time. Okay, we've got plenty of time. Relax.
It's very important.
I look at the clock. I look at the clock. Relax.
We're in good hands.
We leave the best till last.
Okay.
Because people forget that this started off you holding hands, all right? They've forgotten that already. They're listening to the pearls of wisdom. Okay. All right, tell us what you got.
Thank you. Listen, so we know that, you know, there's repressions coming down. The state is trying to change the laws to make it harder to protest. They're bringing in new anti-protest laws. They're tabling them in August. And so I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about what's going on. They're going to say that we cannot wear masks in protests at all. And we know that this affects our community health, our capacity to protect each other from viruses and things that are coming through, but also protects vulnerable people from the surveillance state. You know, we need to be able to, mask up in that way. The second thing that's happening is they're making it illegal to use lock-on devices. Have you ever locked on?
I can't say anything.
It's a no comment. Locking on is like where you use a a heavy device to.
They're going to amputate your leg, are they?
Well, hopefully they cut through the device, not your leg. That's what I'm saying. The plan.
I mean, but it's illegal now to have an anti.
It's not illegal to hold one. It's not illegal to have one, and it's not legal to use it. It's illegal to refuse direction of police. It's not illegal to have the actual device. So it escalates your charges.
So they're going to escalate that.
Yeah.
And what else is on the agenda?
They're going to make it illegal to have symbols of terrorists, which sounds kind of good at this when you off the top of the head, but then you realize that they've just made Palestine Action a terrorist organization in the UK and they are fighting against a genocide. And
we know who the real terrorists are.
We know who the real terrorists are. If we were really going to say, oh, you can't stand under a terrorist symbol, then you wouldn't be able to stand under an organization that has committed genocide. What flags in this country are committing genocide?
The Union Jack.
Yeah.
Well, you know, this is not new.
No.
I keep saying to people, we have a constitution which doesn't protect the individual from the arbitrary exercise of state power in this country, right? So if there's a majority in both houses of parliament, they can pass most laws to restrict what we think are our individual liberties, and that's the dilemma. If you go back to the early 20th century with the Industrial Workers of the World, they passed legislation to make the organisation illegal, but they bypassed Parliament by giving the Governor-General the power to proclaim any organisation illegal. I don't know if you know this, but 20 years ago, after the 7/11 disaster, that legislation was passed in federal Parliament, which allows an individual to be picked up, held incognito for 7 days, to be questioned, and if you refuse to answer, that's because you may have information which may assist the authorities in their deliberations. And then there's another part, legislation which was passed. You don't need state legislation, which was passed, which allows the Home Affairs Minister, used to be the Attorney General, to proclaim, without going through Parliament, any organisation illegal if they believe it poses property or personal threat to the Commonwealth. Yeah. Now that's legislation which is in place, which can be enacted and has been enacted. The difference is between the early 20th century, if you're a member of the Industrial Works of the World, you got 6 months imprisonment. Today, it's 25 years. It's just there's an extraordinary, and that's the problem. There is no protection.
And what happens is when these legislators put this legislation through, it's a green light for the police to engage further brutality on the communities on the ground. I was front line at the Palestine rally last weekend when the police came in and grabbed a woman. She was standing on the path just talking to friends. They grabbed her, they threw her on the ground, and they pulled out this metal stick that they have that retracts. And just jumped on her ribs with this stick and broke her ribs. I haven't followed up, but it was this green light of police violence happens because of these legislations and
legislation
laws.
Legislation allows those things to happen. So how is this going to modify your behaviour if this legislation will go through in August? there is no way it's not going to go through, because obviously it'll be supported by the opposition.
Yeah.
It'll get through the lower house and it'll get through the upper house with a few people, maybe the Marijuana Party or a few other parties, you know, resisting it. So how is this going to impact on the things you've been doing?
Well, I think we need to adapt. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we need to adapt. What I'd like to see is like what we're seeing in the UK at the moment with PAL Action, is people are coming out en masse with signs saying, I oppose genocide, I support PAL Action. Even Roger Waters has done something similar.
Right.
I personally think you need to lean into repression.
Yeah, I mean, like yeah, in the UK,
like in the UK, we know the prisons are at full capacity.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
So what you need to do is seize the moment and go, right, if hundreds or thousands of us turn out and say we support PAL Action, what are they going to do? Where are they going to put those people? What are they going to do, a Chile and open up the football arenas?
You never know.
Well, I mean, you can't rule it out, can you? But you got to strike while the iron's hot and you got to take it on. The question is, are there enough people who are willing to do that?
Mm. Yep. So on the 12th of August, we're going to be marching in solidarity with each other, and we'll see what the response is with each other. But I think, as Brad said, you've got to lean in. You've got to be prepared to face the laws. You've got to be prepared to break the law. It's our moral responsibility to break unjust laws.
What do you describe as an unjust law?
An unjust law is one that doesn't serve the people and the rights of the people and planet to exist freely.
Right. Have you got any addition to that, Brad?
I'd obviously back what Violet just said, but also an unjust law is anything that encroaches on your rights. And unfortunately in Australia, we don't have a constitutional Bill of Human Rights.
No.
It's one of the flaws in one of the many flaws in this system. But
we have four freedoms. You'll love this. Freedom of religion.
Yeah.
Freedom for trial by jury and this could affect you for an indictable charge.
Yeah.
And then we've got the freedom for a fair compensation if the state acquires your property. And the one which is my favourite is because of federation. Remember, we're a federation of colonies.
Yeah.
You cannot discriminate. What can't you discriminate against? You can discriminate on colour, creed, whatever you like, but you can't discriminate constitutionally on the fact of where you were born, what state you were born.
Really?
That's right. That's in the Constitution, to protect the smaller states from the bigger states.
Okay.
Wow. So they're the only four... There's no freedom of speech. There's no freedom of assembly. There's no freedom of protest.
Yeah.
There isn't. It's not there. Yeah. The High Court 20 years ago had to find an implied right to freedom of speech during an election period, because you can't have an election without a parliamentary election without freedom of speech. So the problem is that we face as activists is the fact that the gun is loaded.
Yeah.
Because unlike the United States, where there are some constitutional protections, and even in England they've got more constitutional protections than we have because of common law, the fact is that the state, at the state level and the federal level, can pass any legislation it likes if it has a majority in both houses of parliament, which makes it really difficult. And that's what activists in the past have found. As they increase the pressure, the state increases the repression.
Yeah, and that's why we have to be prepared for that repression. And Brad and I often do workshops on being prepared to be arrested, and being prepared for prison. And that's one of the ways in which we help the community resilience in that way, because,
if people are interested in contacting you and maybe looking at these workshops, how do they do it? Are you willing to tell us over on air?
Yeah, social media. We're both on social media, so you can...
What? Facebook pages?
Facebook and Instagram.
Facebook, Instagram. You could direct message us through any of our social media platforms and say you want to run a workshop on demystifying arrest or demystifying prison. We feel like we've got an obligation to pass on what we've learnt through. Right.
The links to our Instagram will be on the podcast, I believe. They've been taken. Yeah.
And do you do many of these... workshops?
Fairly regularly.
Yeah, but mostly on request.
Well, that's the type of thing people, interested in doing a particular action. How effective do you think the Bob Brown campaigns are in down south? You've been involved in them for a while?
Yeah, well...
I'd say there's hectares of forest that's defended because of them. There's a lot of nature still standing because they've supported protection of it.
Yeah. We did the maths, didn't we? Last time we were down there, we did the maths on, how regularly people lock on, how long they lock on for, and how much that holds up the destruction of the forest.
Yeah.
And it's like it only employs 300 people.
That's right.
In destroying old growth forests for 300 jobs.
Yeah. And this is what I'm saying to people is there are victories.
Yeah.
Mm. You don't have to end up in jail.
Mm-hmm.
There are victories. And by being an activist, you promote that idea that you can fight back and you can be successful.
Yeah.
And that's what both of you have been doing.
We did have a win. We've got a win this week. The person who was spokesperson for that weaponized aid organization quit from the protest.
And that's so right. That's the public shame. That's
right. They were exposed as somebody supporting the death of young kids and they walked away from that. So good job, community.
Right.
Yeah, and the tide has turned on Palestine too. You
know? Well, the tide has turned there. Yeah.
Public opinion has just swung completely against.
Well, you can't watch that type of stuff night after night after night. It reminds you of Vietnam. Yeah. Well, Daryl, do you want to sum up?
Sum up?
Well, not the whole bloody thing. Just tell us who you've been talking to, mate. Christ, you couldn't even bring champagne.
No. Okay, you have been listening to Radical Australia with presenter Joe Toscano and special guests Violet Coco and Brad Homewood here on 3CR Community Radio, 8:55 a.m. on your dial or online at 3cr.org.au. And this program is being podcasted.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.